Our main speaker tonight is Scott.
My name is Scott Redman. I'm an alcoholic. Hey, everybody. I want to thank the Atlanta Group for permitting me to talk tonight. This is a group full of dear friends of mine. Can you hear me in the back? I feel like Lou Gehrig dying. You can? Okay, good. I have a lot of really dear, dear people in this room who I love. This group has been very generous, very kind to me, and I have a great life today. If you're new, I'm sure that just thrills the crap out of you. I was so happy for people having a good time when I got here. I was really happy for them. I'd sit in my seat at my home group, what a group that was. I'll tell you about that group. And I'd hear people talk about the new house and the new family, and I'd sit in my seat and I'd think, maybe you'll go home tonight and maybe your house will blow up. Maybe a new family will burst into flame, and we'll see how spiritual you are next week. I did not have alcoholism when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new here, I just got to share this. I just love it. I about a month ago, I was at an AA meeting, and I heard a newcomer identify in the single best way I've ever heard a newcomer identify ever in my life. I love identifications. I've heard people identify as a crack monster, as a dope fiend. But this guy got up at a meeting I was at, and people were, identifying with less than 30 days. My name's Carmen. I'm an alcoholic. And this guy got up and said, "My name's John. Big problem. Big problem." We can all go home, pretty much. I mean, that's the whole story. I didn't have alcoholism. I had a big problem. And if you're new here, I want to urge you to stick around long enough to get a diagnosis. I did not catch alcoholism for a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I want to urge you to stick around to find out what it is. There was no way that I could have possibly been alcoholic for a lot of reasons. I had been in psychotherapy for 18 years by the time I got sober. I was going to be dead, but I was going to understand it. And I'm not putting therapy down. Therapy's great stuff. I'm in therapy now. I've used therapy plenty in sobriety. And I have no malpractice insurance, so I don't tell people what doctor to go to. But my colossal mistake is I was trying to treat my alcoholism with psychotherapy, which is like showing up at a gunfight with a knife once a week and just getting a colossal pounding. I mean, the idea of most conventional therapy, of Freudian therapy, is to uncover, discover, and unravel, to free associate, maybe delve into your past. And if you're neurotic, if you have neurosis, now what a neurosis is you have anxiety, and then you resolve the anxiety in a bad way. Your solution is worse than your problem. And the idea of a lot of therapy is to come up with a better resolution for your anxiety. But I have alcoholism. So I go to therapy. I feel terrible. Why? Well, yesterday I was so drunk, I was too drunk to walk, so I drove. Well, what are we going to do about that? Let's talk about it. I got it. What were you thinking just before you did it? Nothing. Nothing. I feel terrible. Why? Well, the other day, I sharpened a hypodermic needle on the back of a matchbook striker and sucked some heroin up through a fluffed-up cigarette filter, and I feel miserable. I injected. I feel terrible. What were you thinking just before you did it? Nothing. Let's treat nothing. Treat nothing. Because he means it. It's nothing. My alcoholism is way, way too efficient to be treated by psychotherapy. You would need a board of therapists 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, just to file my stuff, just to get into a folder and put it on a shelf. So I couldn't possibly have been alcoholic. I had a lot of serious psychological problems. In addition to that, I'm Jewish, and Jews don't drink. because it might dull the pain. And, you know, you just don't want to squander any agony opportunity. And I had a terrible allergy to alcohol. If you're a drug addict, I'd like to welcome you to AA. If you're a dope fiend, which is somehow worse than any of us, I'd like to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're the Bigfoot of dope addicts, a dope Goliath, I'd like to welcome you to AA. Tweakers, like to welcome any tweakers here tonight. Love you guys. There you go. Can't even remember why she raised her hand. There's, I love you guys. No short-term memory, and they stay quick for a long time. I'm not making fun of you. I'm coming close, but I'm not. And I'm really not, because I don't care what you've got. I don't care if you're the Energizer Bunny of dope fiends. I don't care. Just catch alcoholism. We'd love to give it to you. And I caught alcoholism in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. I have a bizarre physical reaction, and if you're special and a drug addict, try some controlled crack smoking, you know. Just fill your mouth up with crack smoke and say, I'm not in the mood, and blow it out. And they'll write an article on you. It's a very unusual group of people. It's a strange group of people who are cut out from the mainstream. They're allergic to alcohol. I can't control or moderate once I begin. And I have a bizarre thinking that tells me, you don't have that allergy. There's no allergy. It's all a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing. This whole allergy thing, pshaw, it's not there. Even though, you know, what do I have with white wine? What do I serve with white wine? Prison rape. That's what I have with white wine, okay? But that's bad breaks and misunderstandings. It's not really my fault. And I have this weird thinking that keeps me driving me to take a drink I can't stop taking. And I developed this cancer of the soul, this spiritual tapeworm that ate me up from the inside and left me hollow and insane and alone. And it took me to places that were unimaginable to me. I was loaded on heroin the night my father died. I was a pig, an animal. I collapsed as a man, as a son. I couldn't be there for my mother or my brother. I couldn't even go in and give my dad a kiss and watch him carry his light into another room, because he was dead, gone, and rotting, and that was it. Because the ice around my heart had already become so thick by the time I was a young man, it repelled everything and everyone around me. I had no idea about the connection with people. I had absolutely no idea. I had been introduced to an Old Testament God that I wouldn't be caught in a dark alley with. I had to go to Hebrew school instead of play Little League. My Hebrew name was Shlomo. I wanted a Shlomo-ectomy immediately. There was nothing attractive to me on this, on any level. I dropped out of school when I was 14. I was out of school for 2.5 years. I was brought up in the Bronx to a completely insane family. My wife never believed me about my family until she met him. My mom threw an engagement party for us, and my Aunt Rose came and wore her wig backwards. And it had a bun on it, so the bun was bouncing off her forehead all night. I mean, crazy, disturbed people. My uncle used to steal bales of steel wool from his welding job, and his wife made throw pillows, and he filled the throw pillows with the steel wool. It was like growing up in a psychological theme park. They were just crazy people. And family members wound up in the backwards of Grasslands, which is a horrible place to wind up. And there was chronic institutionalization and suicide attempts. And by the time I was in my early 20s, I was working in show business. I met my wife while I was acting in a Broadway play. We had a great time together, just a great time. And we had our first son, Micah, who was really welcomed into the world, and we were surrounded by friends and got a ton of phone calls. And 2 years and 9 months later, by the time our younger son was born, no one even came to the hospital to say hello to us. We pressed ourselves on the people that loved us like a thumb upon a bruise. It just hurt too much to be around us. And little were we to know that was going to continue for 3 years. And by the time I was 33 years old, on April 22nd, 1985, my... My life had run out between my fingers like a handful of water over and over again. I couldn't talk about my father or look at a picture of him. My career was done. My sons were 6 and 3. They were diagnosed as being functionally retarded because they couldn't put small motor skills together in school, even though there was nothing organically wrong with them. They could barely read or write, and they tested in excess of 150 IQ. And I didn't know that they had alcoholism. I didn't know. I hadn't read our literature. I didn't know about what happens to us. And my wife was just psycho from prolonged exposure to me. I mean, we were so sick. And 2 months, I'll tell you what a good, we met on when I was on Broadway, I'll tell you what a good morning in the Redmond home was like by the time I got sober. I got into an accident, and they took me to the hospital. My blood pressure was 180 over 110. And they said, look, you're going to stroke out. We need to medicate you. You need to lose weight. And I said, you know what? I would like to, but I drink alcohol and smoke marijuana before I go to bed every night, so I'm not going to be able to. And the doctor said, why don't we prescribe some medication for you? And I said, what a country. And they prescribed chloral hydrate for me, which is a fast-acting knockout drop. It's a Mickey. And I love these pills. I love them. Nancy comes home, and I'm eating handfuls of knockout drops and slamming my arms into the wall to keep myself awake so I can enjoy my knockout drop, because you don't want to waste a perfectly good knockout drop. And I keep eating pills and slamming body parts into the wall until I keel over. I go up to my room, and now I'm incontinent like the rest of the 33-year-old men in America. And one night I got up and wet the wall, and my wife was excited. The next morning, she's headed towards the bathroom. This is progress, not perfection. We've got some movement here. And she was thrilled. So that's where we wound up. And on April 22nd, 1985, you see, the night that my father died and I showed up loaded that night, I knew what the problem was. I had to figure it out pretty quick. The problem was heroin and needles, and all I had to do was never put a needle in my arm again, and I wouldn't be the guy who couldn't show up for his own man. All I did was drink till I didn't want to be a drunk. And I didn't, not for 13 years, not till April 22nd, 1985. And I put a needle in my arm again for the first time in 13 years, and I called my therapist, my Jungian therapist, my first Jungian therapist in my 18th year of psychotherapy. And I told him what I had done, and he said to me the exact same thing that Carl Jung told the man who 12-stepped the man, who 12-stepped Bill Wilson. I didn't know that. I didn't find it out until I read our literature, but it was really cool when I read it. He said, there's absolutely nothing that can be done for you. I can't help you. The only thing I can suggest is you attend a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, or we have you institutionalized. Now, of course, Carl Jung couldn't tell Roland Hazard that he should go to a meeting, but he did tell him that all he could do was institutionalize him or he needed to be guarded 24 hours a day. Why I went to that AA meeting? It's a complete mystery to me. It's an absolute complete mystery to me. Why I didn't go to the Nut House? I don't know. On most other days, I would have gladly gone to the Nut House. That's better than dental surgery. That's an uninterrupted source of narcotics for a period of time. But I woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning, I got my best clothes on, I got a bad check to write you, and I went to a place called Unit A in the San Fernando Valley at 7 a.m. I walked into this room, I looked around, and I said, oh my God, how did I wind up in Alcoholics Anonymous? Oh no, oh no. This is beyond lame. This is beyond church, beyond synagogue. This is some plateau of lameness I never even imagined was available to me. Alcoholics Anonymous. And the room looked like it was like the product of 200 years of inbreeding. It was unbelievable. There were like identical twins carving their initials on each other's feet in the back of the room, you know? And everything was a miracle. I'm a miracle. You're a miracle. The furniture and coffee are miracles. It's a miracle. And then I'm waiting for the Jew hunt to break out. I know that's going to start any minute, right? Come on, Jaime, strap these antlers on. Always wanted to run a big buck Jew. And then the AA unsolicited advice guy saw me after the meeting. Oh, my God. God, do I want what you've got? No. No, but thanks. Thanks, Leroy. I appreciate it. Do I bring my own bib overalls next week? Are we going to hook a rug? I just hated it. I hated it. I hated everything about AA. I went back to that meeting every morning for a year. I still have some of my closest friends in Alcoholics Anonymous are members of that meeting. And I think, I don't know why I went back. It's a complete mystery to me. I was out of plans. If you're new here, I pray for you that you're out of plans. If you're new here and you have a plan, it's probably a butte. Don't use your plan. Grab one of us after the meeting and tell us your plan. We want to know the plan. The most popular newcomer plan I know of over the years has consistently been the one more dope deal to set myself up financially for sobriety plan. That's going to wind up on the soft literature rack eventually, I think. I stuck around Alcoholics Anonymous for 6 months and enjoyed the gift of step none. I did nothing. I was receiving nothing, but I guess I was, kind of. My wife reached out to the Al-Anon family groups and started pursuing her deal, and she got a great sponsor, my adorable Ruby, who is still Nancy's sponsor, 19 and a half years in, and I love, love, love this woman. We were a terrible, busted, broken group. I told you the condition my sons were in. I had nothing to bring to my marriage, absolutely nothing. I didn't know how to fight. I didn't know how to talk. It's interesting. One of the most miserable defects of character that has plagued me in drunkenness and in sobriety, something I've had to take a look at quite often, is the defect of mind reading. I imagine that I think I know what people are thinking. And you know what? They're never thinking anything good. They never are. I can't be right, because they're always thinking, you're a hose bag. I mean, they're never, or that's mine, it's not yours. Or it's never good. My wife has told me, she said to me, you're not a mind reader, you're barely a mind user. Which was very hurtful. But I had nothing to bring to my marriage. I used to either scream until my wife shut up, or I would cry until she shut up. Either one's fine with me. I've always liked the tyranny of helplessness. I like to loom, too. I'm a loomer. I like to get a light behind me, so I get her in a shadow. It's like Total Eclipse of the Jew if I get her, like, right in there, right? And if I can work a scream, a cry, and a loom into one fight, that's a hat trick. It doesn't get any better than that, folks. So these are the communication skills that I'm bringing to my marriage. And we had these insane rules in our house. My children were not allowed to watch TV, eat sugar, or curse. So my wife would give them granola for breakfast and then put them in the car with me, Dr. Death, and say, hope you live. I really hope you had a hearty breakfast. I hope it works out for you. But when you can't control what the real deal is, you dress it up. I stuck around for 6 months and I started getting really sick from untreated alcoholism, and I didn't want to drink, and I knew I was going to. And I don't know why I had the grace. I don't know why I experienced the touch of the master's hand and had deflation of ego at depth enough to ask for help. I don't know why. Most people don't. I don't know why I did, but I did. I asked a guy to sponsor me. He invited me from his house and made sure I'd done some reading from the Big Book of AA. He took me through the first two steps that day. We reached step three. We got on our knees and said a prayer, which I felt was embarrassing and unnecessary, but I did it anyway. And then he finished chapter five, and he went back and he gave me instructions on how to do a fourth step from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I came back to him at 9 months of sobriety, and I read my inventory to him, and he changed my life that day, up to and including today. I had some material about Nazis on my inventory. I was terrified of it. I was shown concentration camp films as a kid in religious school. I also got beat up a lot for being Jewish when I was a kid in the neighborhood I grew up in. And I had a lot of material on my inventory. And I read a resentment against Nazis. I'm resentful against Nazis for slaughtering Jews during World War II. It affects my self-esteem, pocketbook, ambition, personal relations, and sex. And my sponsor said, what are the defects of character? You see, I don't just dislike stuff. I hate stuff. I hate stuff so that when I wake up in the morning, I water the hatred and care for it like a little flower. I want to make sure it's well attended to and it's developing properly. The worst thing is when I forget to hate something. You know, and a guy goes, hi. And I go, hi. Oh, I hate him. Why did I do that? No, now I'm going to have to redouble my snubbing and glaring just to get back to where we had finally gotten to, you know? I hate so that when my head hits the pillow, it becomes a rotisserie. I re-experience this stuff. It eats my brain and my heart, and it turns my life black. And it doesn't matter what it is, and there are no small resentments. There are just fatal ones. I die. No big deal, just the source of all spiritual disease, the great destroyer of all alcoholics. Cut you off from the sunlight of the spirit, drag your ass and kill you, but relax, work a step a year. Not a big deal. What is it in me that if God would remove the resentment would be gone? I can't ask God to remove Nazis. What is it in me? What were the defects? And I read to Don that day, let's try nothing. How's nothing? How about no defects? We're talking about Nazis. And he turned, he gave me the treatment. My whole life turned on this moment. He said, Scott, you don't understand. They're not asking if the event was your fault. They're asking if the resentment is your fault. Was the event your fault? No. Was the resentment your fault? Every time, with no exception and no loophole, every single time. What would a normal person do if they didn't like Nazis? Well, they might work against Nazis. They might give money to organizations who fight Nazis. They might just not like Nazis. They might even really not like Nazis, but I don't do that. I get filled with self-pity. I am also a racist and a hypocrite because I hear a German accent, don't even want to know who the person is. I'm an opportunist. I've used this as a weapon. This was ugly, repulsive stuff that I certainly never knew was inside me, let alone wanted to take a look at. And I walked out of that house that day a free man. I had a solution for every single one of my problems. Now, was the event my fault? Sure, there were plenty of events that were my fault. When I was resentful at my aunt for abusing me when I was a kid, was the event my fault? Absolutely not. People might say, well, the kid was a brat, this and that. I'm sorry. I don't buy it. Not for me, not in my life. Grown-ups are giants. They can do anything they want to kids, and sometimes they do. And it's horrible. And if I don't get free of that resentment, my life will be so disrupted and eclipsed, I'll be like my children were when I came into AA. I did step 6 and 7, and that to me is the fire-starting moment. That's when I draw close to him and he reveals himself to me. That's when I find out how I'm going to take this inventory and I'm going to use it for change instead of being a self-fulfilling prophecy or just something to be really annoyed about. And I did my 8-step list. I try to share this anytime I talk. It's particularly fun for me to share it in New York. My first couple of weeks of sobriety, I heard the best reading of step 8 I've ever heard. And it was from a guy named Nino. He had a heavy New York accent, and he had never read step 8 before. He had never read chapter 5 before. He was at this meeting with a hospital group. He had hospital plastic on. He was newly sober. He was reading chapter 5 for the first time, and he got up to step 8, and he read, made a list of all those we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Jesus Christ! He looked out into the room as if to say, have you seen this? Do you know what's in here? It was so beautiful, because it's all I saw. I didn't see anything else on the list, man. I didn't see anything else. I just went, oh no, not that money, not that money. My wife and I had borrowed a car and sold it. Not the car. I wouldn't have taken that much money if I knew I had to give it back. If you're new, don't worry, it's 8 steps from where you are. And 8's really not the annoying one. It's 9. I held the guy I sponsored. I had 10 years of sobriety while he breathed his last breath and he carried his light into another room and I felt the presence of my father come back into my life. It had been happening for a long time. And I realized I had no pictures of him in my house and I went and got some pictures and I started telling his grandsons about him because they didn't have any relationship with their grandfather. I started re-entering my marriage and tried to bring something instead of take something. And I had nothing to bring. I used to think that in the back of my twisted mind that a certain amount of housework should equal a certain amount of sex. That there should be like conversion tables on the back of cleaning products of housework to sex. I had absolutely nothing to bring. Nothing. And I started living an AA life. My sons are these two gorgeous, robust grown men, intellectual, very gifted, and it's not because God likes us more than the people whose children got annihilated. We got really nailed in the Northridge earthquake pretty seriously. Our house got broken up. I got a physical injury. We got badly traumatized. And shortly after it, we were in an AA function up in Canada, and a woman who used to live in Los Angeles came up to me at this function, and she said, "Oh, I'm so glad that God got us out of L.A. before the quake." And I said, "Oh, so he likes you. He likes you, but we're crap, but he likes you." And she said to me, I guess he just felt you had some lessons to learn." I'm out of here. I can't live in that world. I can't live in that world. I can't live in a world where I've got some God saying, "Get him, get him, get the Redmond boy, get him. No evacuation plan for you, Jew boy, get him. Get him, turn his wife to salt, kill his goat, put a finger in his eye, get him. Smote him, smote him, smote anyone he talks to. We'll sort him out later." St. Thomas Aquinas says to know God is to not know God. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says no one can fully comprehend or define that power which is God. I can't live in a world with an annihilator. I can't buy it. I don't see it. Every time I ascribe a personality or an intention to God, I make him this big. God is a woefully inadequate word to define this. God is a woefully inadequate word to define what's in this room. To know what the connective tissue of Alcoholics Anonymous is, which is a miracle. And it is. It is. Because, and there's a lot of people in this room who I have very intimate relationships with, who I really love, people I've sponsored for a long time. When we work together, a connection gets created. How crazy is it for me to think that when we get removed, that connection is not the face and the breath of God? And it's times a million. It's times 2.4 million, I think, now. And it's times hundreds in this room. It's now a mystery that I feel very comfortable with. I demand the mystery. Anytime someone tries to answer it, I see it as divisive and the will of man. Certainly not the will of God. I can tell you what God's will is for me all the time. My God's will for me is that I be as free as possible of fear, resentment, and sexual misconduct so that I can do the deal. My God could care less what I'm doing for a living. And for me, my God's not annihilating children. He expects me to do my job in Alcoholics Anonymous if my kids are robust and prospering or if they get annihilated. My God expects me to do my job if I get caught in the earthquake or not. God expects me, I have a wonderful marriage. If I was getting divorced, my God is not giving out the divorces. And I have seen people in AA stay sober through everything. If you're new, I want to welcome you to AA. I want to urge you to stick around long enough to get a diagnosis. What do resentments, fears, and sexual misconduct have to do with alcoholism? They actually are alcoholism. They're the fifth wheel. They're this horrible spiritual sickness that plucks us beyond the opportunity to be helped by conventional resources. So look what we get. Look what we get. You know, we get the touch of the master's hand. We get to play it with each other. You know, you get to show somebody the work, watch them lose their breath and push away from the table going, "I didn't know. I didn't know. Who knew?" You know? If you're new, when you want to drink, don't. Don't drink. The not drinking part is a moose. If it was not for the not drinking part, we would be a much bigger organization. I guarantee it. Because a lot of people want AA, but it's that gall darn not drinking thing. I want to urge you to take this thing as seriously as you possibly can and go out there and have the time of your life. Welcome to AA. Welcome home. Thanks.